From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The group seeking to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy has sued over the rejection of its recall application. Recall Dunleavy filed a lawsuit in Anchorage Superior Court today against the Division of Elections and its director, Gail Funumiai. Funumiai relied on the advice of Attorney General Kevin Clarkson, who rejected each of the four grounds for recall listed on the application. Recall Dunleavy lawyer Scott Kendall says Clarkson's position was expected.
He was one of the governor's chief advisors when he took the unacceptable and radical actions that caused the recall to occur.
Kendall says Clarkson should have provided the Division of Elections with independent counsel.
He took it on himself to essentially grade his own homework, and none of us should be surprised that he gave himself a passing grade.
The lawsuit says Funumiai, quote, unlawfully denied Recall Dunleavy and the citizens of Alaska the opportunity to exercise their constitutional and statutory right to recall public officials by refusing to certify the recall application on Monday. The Division of Elections verified more than 46,000 signatures on the recall application. Three Alaska Pioneer Homes residents are suing Governor Mike Dunleavy and the state, seeking to block a sudden rate increase that would more than double the cost of staying at the homes. Lawyers for Marion and Howard Ryder of Juneau and Eileen Casey of Ketchikan, as well as Ryder's adult son, Brad Ryder, filed a class action lawsuit in Ketchikan Superior Court yesterday. The plaintiffs argue that having their rates more than double in a single month is unreasonable and made without meaningful notice. They also say the residents are faced with decisions like divorce and bankruptcy as a result of the increases. Department of Health and Social Services Commissioner Adam Crum and Pioneer Home Director Clinton Lasley are also named, along with Dunleavy and the state, as defendants. The lawsuit seeks to represent a class of plaintiffs that include any Pioneer Homes residents, as well as residents of the Alaska Veterans and Pioneer Home in Palmer, affected by the rate increase. Marion Ryder and Casey saw their monthly rates jump by over 130%. The lawsuit says Casey has been threatened with eviction due to $95,000 in debt she accumulated before she was approved for Medicaid. A Superior Court judge in Anchorage has issued a ruling that may hobble the big money independent expenditure groups that have come to dominate Alaska elections. Jason Harrow of the group Equal Citizens is one of the attorneys who brought the case on behalf of three Alaska voters.
I think many Alaskans saw in the last election cycle, with respect to groups that were supporting Governor Dunleavy from out of state and things like that, that these independent groups can be very similar and very closely aligned with the campaign, even though they're not identical. And because they're technically independent, there's no limits that apply. And that's what we were targeting.
Judge William Morris says the Alaska Public Offices Commission should reinstate the $500 per person contribution limit to independent groups, or PACs. That's in state law. APOC stopped enforcing it in the wake of a U.S. Supreme Court decision called Citizens United. Harrow says APOC went too far in its interpretation.
Well, the key point is that it wasn't quite Citizens United that led to the opening of the floodgates.
Harrow says he expects the case will be reviewed by the state Supreme Court, and then he hopes to bring it to the U.S. Supreme Court to curb unlimited money in politics. The spokeswoman for the State Department of Law says the department believes the court's order is mistaken. The department has filed a petition to have the case reheard. The U.S. Forest Service kicked off a series of public meetings Monday in Juneau to discuss why it's seeking a full exemption to the roadless rule in the Tongass National Forest. The federal agency explained it didn't anticipate big changes in the Tongass as a result of the exemption, but some in the crowd weren't convinced. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
We had other folks that were ready to ask questions. We're going to get to you.
In Juneau, people had a lot of questions for the Forest Service. Questions about why verbal comments weren't being documented at the meeting. Questions about why a previous comment period, where most of the public told the agency they wanted to keep the roadless rule in place, was ignored. Chris French, who works at the Forest Service's D.C. office, told the audience of a few hundred their feedback was still influencing the final decision.
I hear you. And that is certainly something that as we look at those comments that have come in, if we think we need to shift, we certainly can.
The Clinton-era roadless rule makes it difficult to build new roads through national lands. But state officials and Alaska's congressional delegation have long maintained there's not enough access to valuable stands of timber or energy and mining opportunities in the region. In October, the Forest Service announced it was moving ahead with the full exemption. Tribal governments, tourism operators, and environmental groups have expressed concern about the impact this change could have on deer and salmon habitat. That's why Summers Cole wanted to be here. He's a gill netter.
Waters that are fed by terrestrial habitat.
And Cole is concerned that terrestrial habitat could be damaged by logging and affect salmon streams. The Forest Service explained to Cole a full roadless rule exemption in the Tongass would have virtually no impact on fisheries. But Cole's not sure.
I'll never claim to speak for other fishermen, but I do know that it's on a lot of people's radar.
The Forest Service was supposed to be considering a suite of options for the Tongass that allowed road building to varying degrees. But over the summer, the Washington Post reported Governor Dunleavy had the ear of the president. And at Dunleavy's urging, President Trump directed the Forest Service to choose the full exemption. Murray Walsh is okay with that.
Most of the people in this room like the roadless rule. I do not.
Walsh doesn't like the roadless rule because he thinks it impedes business. He says exempting the Tongass from the roadless rule is a step in the right direction.
You have a governor of a state who wants full exemption and has asked for it and will keep asking for it.
Richard Peterson also thinks Alaskans should have a say in how the Tongass is managed, but he doesn't think that's what's currently playing out.
I'm really frustrated that the process has been abbreviated.
Peterson is the president of the Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, a tribal government that's a cooperating agency with the state on the roadless rule decision. But he doesn't believe his voice is being heard. Recently, six tribal governments in the region sent a unifying letter to the Forest Service opposing a full rollback of the roadless rule.
People here who've been born here have 10,000 years of descendancy from this forest. We matter to this forest just as much as the timber and anything else, and so we should be the ones here in Alaska that decide what happens for Alaska.
On Tuesday, the Forest Service will hold another public meeting in Ketchikan. Public comments will be accepted until December 17th. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Nearly 1,000 passengers are affected by the Alaska Marine Highway System's abrupt cancellation of ferry service across much of southeast Alaska. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick has this update.
After announcing repairs to the ferry Lekanti would be too costly to undertake, the Alaska Marine Highway System started calling passengers last week. That included Steve and Deborah Hemingway. They're currently in Tacoma with no way to get back to the city of Gustavus with their vehicle.
We tried to work with the Alaska Marine Highway System, and it just, you know, we were just abandoned completely by it.
Figures released Monday by the Alaska Department of Transportation show more than two-thirds of affected bookings have been refunded. That's because with both the Aurora and Lekanti in layup for repairs, there's no service now to Gustavus, Angoon, Tenneke Springs, or Pelican for the foreseeable. Steve Hemingway says he's been a regular on the ferries since 1976.
I've been stranded a couple times, but usually it was because of mechanical issues, and it was until the next ferry. But I've contributed a lot of revenue to the ferry system in all that time, and this is what I get.
There's reduced service to Lynn Canal communities of Haines and Skagway. That's allowed rebookings for most passengers, but 120 vehicle bookings were refunded. Service was abruptly cut last week after DOT officials announced the Lekanti needed $2.8 million more work than had been budgeted. State transportation officials say the plan is a side-by-side comparison of the Aurora and Lekanti and to repair the vessel that needs the least amount of steel work. Meanwhile, the two Alaska-class ferries completed this year are slated to have side doors installed this winter. Transportation officials say they're negotiating with Vigor Alaska Shipyard for this contract and didn't have a timeline for when the Taslina or Hubbard ferries would be in service. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Traffic engineers are recommending rebuilding an accident-prone intersection in Juneau as a highway interchange, meaning a pair of new on-ramps and off-ramps and an overpass. At $34 million, it's the most expensive of the options the consultants analyzed, but it was also the only option that improved both overall safety and traffic flow around the intersection near Fred Meyer. The State Department of Transportation published Kinney Engineering's report on Monday on its website. The recommendation is just one early step in the department's process to prioritize and select projects. Eric Stimpfel says he was nearly rear-ended there on Monday evening. He says he was getting onto Eagan Drive with his family. His wife noticed the driver behind him wasn't slowing down.
We were just right at the end of the merge lane. They were not letting us in. I was already going 50, but I stayed in the emergency lane until they went by. I honked on the horn really hard.
But it's failed left turns across oncoming traffic that tend to result in the most severe crashes. The 210-page report gets into some pretty cold statistical analysis. For example, it assigns dollar values to drivers' time lost to traffic delays, as well as property damage, injuries, even fatalities. Other options they considered created traffic delays and made accidents more likely elsewhere, though at lower speeds. The report's crash analysis also undercuts some assertions that this is Juneau's, or even Alaska's, most dangerous intersection. The consultants found the crash rate is comparable to other intersections of this type around Alaska. The Department of Transportation has scheduled an open house about the intersection from 4 to 7 p.m. on November 19th in the community room at the Nugget Mall. The Department of Transportation plans to begin a project in 2020 to reroute the Sterling Highway and construct what would be Alaska's largest bridge. The Kenai Peninsula Clarion reported the Sterling Highway MP 45 to 60 project will include installation of the bridge running across Juneau Creek Canyon. Project managers for the plan, also known as the Cooper Landing Bypass Project, say the main priorities are to have meaningful construction completed by the end of 2020 and to open traffic by 2025. Royal Caribbean ships will not be adding Glacier Bay National Park visits to their itineraries next year. In the spring, the Miami-based cruise line announced that it received its first 10-year concession from the National Park Service to add Glacier Bay visits. But a company spokesman confirmed Tuesday that it was for early spring and late fall for so-called shoulder season permits. Royal Caribbean is opting not to use them next year. Royal Caribbean plans to bring three ships to Alaska in 2020, including the Ovation of the Seas. It's the largest cruise ship in Alaska with a carrying capacity of around 6,400 passengers and crew. And finally, an election official in Pennsylvania didn't think anything of the absentee ballot application until he saw the out-of-this-world voting location. The Newcastle News reports that the application to Lawrence County's Voter Services Department listed the location as International Space Station, Low Earth Orbit. Elections officials found out that the astronaut Andrew Drew Morgan, currently on the space station, has an address in a Pennsylvania township and is a registered voter in the county. County officials set up a secure email and password and a fillable PDF file that Morgan received, filled, and sent back. Here's a look at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island. Tonight, cloudy, patchy freezing fog, lows around 30, light winds. Wednesday, patchy freezing fog, rain, highs around 40. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.